Our gospel reading for today is from the 19th chapter of John, verses 1 to 16. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. And the soldiers wove a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they dressed him in a purple robe. They kept coming up to him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and striking him on the face. Pilate went out again and said to them, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no case against him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." When the chief priests and the police saw him, they shouted, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him. I find no case against him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to that law, he ought to die, because he has claimed to be the Son of God." Now when Pilate heard this, he was more afraid than ever. He entered his headquarters again and asked Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate therefore said to him, "Do you refuse to speak to me? Do you not know that I have power to release you and power to crucify you?" Jesus answered him, "You have no power over me unless it has been given you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." From then on, Pilate tried to release him, but the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you are no friend of the emperor. Everyone who claims to be a king sets himself against the emperor." When Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus outside and sat on the judge's bench at a place called the Stone Pavement, or in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation for the Passover, and it was about noon. He said to the Jews, "Here is your king." They cried out, "Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!" Pilate asked them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but the emperor." Then he handed him over to them to be crucified. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Please be seated.
About a year and a half ago, there was the Olympics in London, and they had a great kind of opening ceremony with all the show. They had a lot of their famous musicians and comedians and different things, a really fun show. And I remember there was a certain part where this guy came out in a costume and you couldn't see his face, and then he lifted up his mask, and it was Eric Idle from Monty Python, the kind of British comedy troupe from decades ago, and he sang a famous song from one of their movies, Life of Brian from 1979. He sang a song that goes, "Always look on the bright side of life." And if you've never heard it before, it's from, again, Life of Brian from 1979 by Monty Python. And in this story, there's a guy named Brian who lives at the time of Jesus, where Jesus lives in Palestine. And the comedy is that people keep on mistaking him for Jesus. And so they're following him and saying, "What? How should I live? What should I do, Brian?" And he says, "I'm not the Messiah." But over and over, he gets mistaken for Jesus. And at the end, he's actually crucified because they think he's Jesus Christ. And while he's on the cross, he's sitting there kind of suffering, miserable. And this Eric Idle character is next to him. And he's like, "Why are you so sad? Why don't you just put a smile on your face? Look on the bright side." And that's what this song is about, keeping on the bright side even when things are bad. And so it goes like this, and he's a Cockney from London. So he goes, "If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Oh, always look on the bright side of life." And then, I won't do any more, but thank you. The weird thing about that song that makes it so funny is that when you're on a cross being crucified, really there's no looking on the bright side of that, right? It's obscene to be, "Oh, it's not so bad." No, it is really bad when you're on the cross. It really doesn't get any worse than that. Well, I mentioned that kind of silly song with the silly scene of making life light of serious stuff. Because I think when, for me at least, when I encounter a story like the one we read today, I have this temptation to lighten things up for my sermon because I don't want to just be down in the dumps, miserable, sad kind of thing. And I also, you know, I don't really like hearing about Jesus suffering and being struck in the face. It's not something I enjoy. You know, I think Jesus is the Messiah and my Lord, and I don't want to think too much about his misery. So I don't really want to come face to face with it. But it's not just that I don't want to think about his suffering because of Jesus' sake, but I think maybe the other problem I have with facing it is that Christian teaching has always said it's not just those people back then who crucified Jesus. It wasn't just the Romans and the religious leaders and the angry crowd saying, crucify him. But in some way, you and I are also Jesus' crucifiers. It's our sin together, our selfishness, our violence, our lack of compassion, our greed, our inability to love as we've been loved, our inability to forgive as we've been forgiven. In so many different ways, it's our collective brokenness that mocks Jesus and sends him to the cross. And so that's hard to square with. I don't like to think about that I'm one of Jesus' crucifiers as well. But though it may be an uncomfortable subject, the Christian faith does want to say that in some important way, not only Jesus' life gives us salvation, but his death and his suffering, as we hear about today, is the key to God making peace with us and with the rest of the world. And so I'd like to think with you about how we might make sense in a modern era of Jesus' suffering and death. Some people nowadays, as they read the story, really have trouble making sense of it at all. And one of the questions some people ask is that they look at Jesus' life and they say, yes, a loving, good, wise teacher, probably following God. But then they hear about God giving him up for crucifixion and him dying, and they ask, well, couldn't God just make peace with the world without sending Jesus to die, right? If God wants to forgive, couldn't Jesus just forgive, and God could just forgive and not have to have his son die on the cross? Is it that God's just really into someone dying and someone has to pay the price? And so I guess it's going to be Jesus because, you know, someone has to die. So we can ask, couldn't God just forgive without sending his son to the cross, without him having to suffer as he did? And I guess right away when we ask a question like that, we don't really know the answer because I'm not God and neither are you. And so we can ask, could he have just forgiven it? Maybe. Yeah, probably. He is God. I mean, I suppose God can forgive whoever he wants, however he wants. But I guess the question would be, what would be lost if God had just declared in the Bible, I forgive you, as he does in other places, but never had suffered and died on the cross? What would be lost in our understanding of God, in our understanding of what God's love is like? I think there's a section of scripture in Romans 5 where St. Paul is thinking about the purpose of the cross, what it means for us. And he says in Romans 5, for while we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. Indeed, rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person someone might actually dare to die. But God proves his love for us that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So according to Paul, you know, there's probably lots of reasons for the crucifixion. There's lots of things that we can say about it. But one of the reasons for it is that it's living and dying proof of God's love, right? If we ever doubt that God would do anything for us, if we ever doubt that Jesus truly loves us or forgives us, we can look at the cross and see this is a God who's willing to die for us. And again, I don't think it's about this idea that God just enjoys sending someone to die, and so he sends his son in our place because he's just into death. But I think it's more about God joining in everything that we join in out of love, including death. And I was trying to think of an analogy of the cross, and one of the things that came to mind for me was being a parent. And when you're a parent of a small child, and I have a 2-year-old, one thing you deal with a lot out of your love is dealing with their messes. So like during those first few months, I mean, it just seems like there's nothing but changing diapers all the time. I felt like if I had my business card, it should say pastor and diaper changer. I mean, it's just nonstop. And then a few months ago, closer to Christmas, my whole family got a flu. And I remember holding my little boy as he was having a flu all over me. And it wasn't very fun. And if you ask me or any other parent, loving parent, do you enjoy those dirty moments of caring for your child? The answer is probably in and of themselves, no. I mean, I don't enjoy dirty diapers. I didn't enjoy having Ben have a flu all over me. But if the question is, do you take value in that? And do you feel like it's what you need to do? Is this part of your love, being there for caring for them when they're dirty? I mean, yeah, absolutely. What parent couldn't care for their child when they needed care, even during the dirty times? And I think this is kind of like Jesus' love on the cross. Jesus doesn't enjoy the cross. God doesn't enjoy sending his son to the cross. The cross is not a time where Jesus is whistling and looking on the bright side of life. For God to show his love for us, and maybe even for God to live out his love for us, he has to suffer the same fate that we do, which is death and a certain amount of suffering. And I think the reality is that Jesus doesn't just experience some of the suffering we experience. I think really on the cross, he probably has it a lot worse than any of us will have, right? Some of us experience violence. Some of us experience emotional abuse. Some of us die before maybe our time. But Jesus experiences it all at the same time: physical violence, social rejection, and a long, drawn-out, painful death. He pretty much has the worst package in terms of the end of his life. But we're told, again, that Jesus subjects himself to this stuff because he basically loves the world, and that means that he chooses to join in everything that we experience, including life's worst sufferings. One of the things this means for us is that when we're in our darkest valleys, whatever that would be, mourning the death of a loved one, being ill, feeling rejected, feeling the pain of sickness, even dying, Jesus knows what it's like. Jesus suffers with us as he did on the cross, and Jesus ultimately is one with us even in our suffering. And then I think beyond that, in some mysterious way that none of us can quite comprehend, we can feel it, I think. We can feel it's true, but not comprehend it. Somehow, God makes peace with the world through Jesus' death. The Apostle Paul, when he talks about the cross, calls it a mystery of the faith. And so I certainly wouldn't want to come here and say, here's exactly how it works. Here's why it works. But we can all kind of feel that through the cross, God makes peace with us. I've been reading a book called Paris 1919. It's a history book about the story of after World War I, the victors of that war, which was the U.S., England, France, and a couple other countries, are meeting and they're deciding, how are we going to make peace now that we've won the war and draw up a treaty with the people we've defeated, Germany, Austria, the Ottoman Empire. And so they draw up a treaty, and it's interesting that in the treaty they draw up, it's pretty harsh. They make Germany and the other countries who lost say that the war was their fault. They gave them a huge thing called reparations, which meant they had to pay a huge fine of trillions of dollars over the next few decades. And they looked at a lot of their lands that they wanted, and they said, we'll take this, we'll take this, and we'll take this. And so a lot of people look back on World War I and how it ended in the treaty and how harsh it was and say, you know, this might have been part of the reason for World War II, because the treaty was so harsh that they remained enemies. The ones who lost were bitter and angry that they had lost so much after losing the war. I think to an extent, the treaty that God makes with us on the cross is similar to this. God does make a treaty with us and says, whatever you've done that's not right, whatever makes you feel separate from God, consider it done on the cross. Consider it forgiven. But there's a major difference than the worldly treaties like the one after World War I. In that treaty, the powerful winners make the ones who lose, the ones without the power, pay the sacrifice to a large extent. When it's God, when it's Jesus, Jesus says, even though I'm the one with the power, even though you're the one who did the wrong thing, you know what? I'll be the one who sacrifices. I'll be the one who gives up my son, so that you would know that even though you may see yourself as an enemy of me, we're not enemies. My love is for you, and this is our treaty so that you might have peace with me. It's a pretty amazing thing. And so the cross is this exchange in a way where God tells us that we're not his enemies anymore. Even if we see ourselves that way, even when we feel like we're his enemies, God has made peace with us through Christ. There's a famous pastor named Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a German pastor of the Lutheran Church during the time of Nazism, and he ended up getting killed for opposing Nazism. But he wrote about the cross of Christ and explained it in this way. He says, Jesus Christ lived in the midst of his enemies. At the end, all his disciples deserted him. On the cross, he was utterly alone, surrounded by evildoers and mockers. For this cause he had come, to bring peace to the enemies of God. So the Christian, too, belongs not in seclusion of a cloistered life, but in the thick of foes. There is his commission, his work. The kingdom is to be in the midst of your enemies, and he who will not suffer this does not really want to be in the kingdom of Christ. I think it's a beautiful description that Jesus goes on the cross to be among his enemies and to really forgive them and love him. And even the Christian life that comes after is about being among our enemies and showing them love nonetheless. And so in a simple way, our job as Christians, our job when we encounter this story, is to proclaim that Jesus has made peace with the world. Even though we're the ones who crucify him, God makes peace with us on the cross and calls us into a new life of love and forgiveness for all. And so in this season of coming face to face with Christ's suffering, we can give thanks for a lot of reasons. We can give thanks because we have a God who's selfless, a God who dies for us, a God who pays the sacrifice for us. And we can give thanks because we are at peace with God, because God has made peace with us. Amen. Let's stand as we continue in song.